Okay, the Early Childhood and Youth Development Committee will come to order. Representative Reinert spent 2 hours reading the minutes and has indicated approval, so I understand she's moving the minutes. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed, no. Carries. Representative Moran, you have the honor of the first bill in this committee. So would you take the stand? And I assume that you're going to move the bill since it's yours. Representative Moran moves House File 107, and it is my understanding that you have an amendment labeled A1.
I do.
Is that correct? Okay, just to put it in the shape that the author wants, all in favor of the amendment say aye.
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 All opposed, no. Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Representative Moran.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I am excited to be here and just thank you for this opportunity to bring this bill before the committee. In 2011, the Minnesota legislature passed a bill that reduced the number of the number of allowable absent days for children in the child care assistance program from 25 days to just 10 days. This law went into effect on January 1st, 2013, and families in child care programs are already feeling the pressure. So the bill before you will amend Minnesota Statute 2012, Section 119B, 13 Division 7. So what the bill would do is the bill before you will return the number of absentee days back to 25 days and with exceptions.
Is that basically just returns it to prior law then?
Yes.
Okay. Is there any other explanation you wanted to give on the bill before we hear from the witnesses?
So while this policy was implemented for budgetary reasons, the unintended consequences would ultimately far outweigh any possible savings the state would see from this cut. So it's a bill that has bipartisan support, and I do have testifiers who will further talk about the impact.
Okay. Are your witnesses Cissa Keller or Cissa? Kimberly Osborne? And Erica Jackson, is that it? Okay. Whichever one wants to be first, go ahead. State your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cissa Keller, and I'm the Government Relations Committee Chair for the Minnesota Child Care Association. MCCA is an association of almost 250 privately owned licensed child care centers throughout the state of Minnesota. We are one of many organizations that are listed on the back of your one-pager, your informational sheet, that are interested in this policy change. As Representative Moran stated, this bill is to restore a cut that was made in 2010 as a budget savings measure. Unfortunately, this money savings move is having significant unintended consequences for Minnesota's child care providers, the low-income families they serve, and most importantly, every young child in child care. Kim is going to talk to you about the realities this policy change is having in child care settings and how it's affecting the viability of child care businesses across the state. Erica is here to share with you how this harsh policy is affecting her family. I would like to talk about this policy more broadly. By reducing the number of allowable absent days that can be reimbursed to a provider from 25 days with additional medical exemptions to 10 days and no additional medical exemptions, we have created a statewide public health crisis, undermining the viability of child care providers to remain in business and ultimately creating an impassable barrier for these young children to be prepared for both school and lifelong success. To put this in perspective, New Horizon Academy, one of the largest center providers in Minnesota, did an informal survey of private pay families to look at the number of days their child was absent in a year. On average, these children were absent 23 days in 1 year. And as the state that has been recognized as a leader in early care and education by being one of the 9 states to receive a federal Race to the Top Early Learning Challenge grant last year, Minnesota has the worst absent day policy of this group. Families who use child care assistance are typically single parent families who are either working, seeking employment, or going to school. These families face many barriers, one of which is the lack of strong support system in a time of need, like when their child is sick and they need to go to work. These parents cannot afford to not go to work and so are forced to make difficult choices that are generally not in the best interest of any involved. We are seeing this play out in child care centers and family child care homes across the state already as the flu season hits, where parents are bringing their sick children to the child care and thus exposing every child in the center to the flu. And just like last week, we received a story from a parent with a 2-year-old. Her son had several intestinal surgeries before the age of 1. As a result, he has a weakened immune system. About 2 weeks ago, he came down with a common cold. The doctor instructed her to keep him home until he was 100% better and not to expose him to other potential illness. Because of this policy, she kept him home for 1 day. Within 2 days, he was hospitalized with a very contagious respiratory illness, and the doctors believe he potentially exposed all of his friends at the child care program with the illness. Had mom been able to keep him home until he was fully recovered, he would most likely not be hospitalized today, and his friends would not have been exposed to the serious illness. In closing, this committee heard testimony last week about the importance of brain development in the first 5 years of life. All the benefits you heard about quality caring interactions between a caregiver and the child are predicated that there is a stable, continuous relationship between the caregiver and child. This harsh, unfair policy puts these relationships at risk because once these families run out of allowable absent days, they most likely will not be in child care that provides them with these high-quality interactions that are so essential for preparing their children for lifelong success. And in your packets, we have given you a list of stories that we're getting from families already just through this first month of this year. So thank you.
Thank you. Kimberly?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kimberly Osborne, and I am the program director at Child Care Center in North Minneapolis for Catholic Charities. Northside is an early education center in North Minneapolis for children ages 6 weeks of age to 12 years. We provide early education, preschool, school readiness, and school reinforcement experiences. 100% of our families are eligible for child care assistance. The average income of the family at our center is $14,500 for a family of 3. I speak to you as a provider and a parent who is concerned about the impact that this change is having on the children, their families, and the greater community. The reduction in allowable absent days from 25 to 10 is a serious problem for child centers, which in turn has a negative impact on the children and the families we serve. This is an issue of public health. Parents know that after their child is absent 10 days, Catholic Charities must weigh whether to allow the family to stay while we directly subsidize their child care from donor contributions or allow another family to take their place at the center. Therefore, parents are bringing their children to the center even when they are clearly ill. This contributes to spreading disease in the center and throughout the community. When children are sick, it is important for us to support parents so they are able to keep their children at home. And it is a licensing standard that parents with children who have most common illnesses be out for 24 hours after medication before they can bring them back to a licensed child care center. When a family utilizing child care assistance to go to work and or school runs out of absent days, providers are forced to take a financial loss by continuing care without reimbursement for the absent days or to terminate care because they have used their 10 absent days. Neither is a viable business or ethical decision. Because Catholic Charities is a nonprofit with other sources of funding, we can choose to keep serving children who miss more than 10 days each year because of our belief in predictability and consistency in high quality care, even though it means we are not reimbursed for caring for that child. Keeping staffed up even when a child may be absent is what makes quality, consistent care possible. Unfortunately, using our funds in this way means we are able to serve fewer families in terms of providing scholarship assistance for others who are struggling to make ends meet. We are very concerned about the long-term effects of this change on our center, but even more other centers that are forced to kick families out after 10 absent days because they cannot afford the loss in revenue. Where will these children go? They will no longer get quality care to prepare them for school. You all know that children and their families benefit from high-quality child care programs with strong early learning and development programs. And in order to work, parents need access to stable, affordable, reliable child care. Please support the bill and reinstate the 25-day absent day allowance for families in the CCAP program. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Osborne. Erica?
Hi, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Erica Jackson. I'm a
Could you move the microphone right directly towards her?
Yes. I am a single parent of two kids, a 10-year-old and a 4-year-old, and I am working at this time. My son has an upper respiratory infection, which is basically asthma, and by it being only 10 days where he can just, where it just gets cut after 10 days, excuse me, I'm very scared. Okay, so he has asthma, basically. It's an upper respiratory infection. And he can miss more than 10 days out of a year just because of that. And by me being a single parent working, if he miss more, he can... I'm so nervous. Okay, so... What I'm saying is that by him having that upper respiratory infection, you know, he can miss more than 10 days at a time. And by you guys just saying that, well, after 10 days, then we'll have to start paying out of our pockets. I'm at a minimum wage, and no way possible I can pay that. If he can't go to daycare, I can't work. And if I can't work, then that means I'm going to have to be on a SET grant, which is that $437 a month. I don't want that. I don't want $437 a month, you know, trying to feed two grown boys, 10-year-old and a 4-year-old. I'm doing all I can do to maintain what I'm doing now. If you get back to 25 days, it'll just help me so much more.
Thank you. Okay. Is there Representative Moran, did you want to say anything else before I ask if there's any opposition?
I will let any questions.
Just the questions? Okay. Who has... Oh, Representative Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Moran, was this provision included in the governor's budget proposal?
Representative Moran.
Mr. Chair, no, it was not. It is not.
And... thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Moran, do we have how big of a fiscal impact does this have? You said that it was done for the budget. Is this bill going to go on to Health and Human Service Finance from here?
It will.
Representative Moran.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Yes, it will. Representative Meyer.
Representative Meyer.
Well, that's all the questions I have.
Okay.
Thank you.
And just remember, members, this is policy, and they'll take care of the finance there. But Representative Krupshaw.
Thank you, Representative Moran. Just a clarifying question as I was reading through it, and thank you for bringing this up, this bill. In the language, and I was reading through the amendment, if you're gone for a partial day, it looks like the daycare provider or the provider is funded at the full rate, but it doesn't count against them. I'm just wondering, just for clarifying sake, is there a scenario where someone could exceed the days because of partial days, and what is the intention? No opposition, just clarification.
Representative Moran, or Ms. Keller?
Mr. Chair, Representative, so yes, if they attend any part of the day, they would the provider would be reimbursed for the full day. But as Kim was mentioning, most providers have policies in place that say they have a fever or they have illness. They actually have to be fever-free or after medication for at least 24 hours. So generally, if they leave, you know, at noon on a Tuesday, at a minimum, they will not be back before Thursday. So even though they're paid for all of that first day, they are going to miss that second day. Does that make sense?
Representative Krupshaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, so just so I understand, and this is what I'm trying to understand, is if you're gone for half a day and it doesn't count against you, but at the top it says the daycare provider will be only reimbursed for 25 days. I'm just looking, what happens if it's a total of 28? Is there, if someone's shorted, is the provider shorted? How does all that flow?
Ms. Keller.
Mr. Chair, Representative, so yes, if we go back to the current policy or the previous policy, providers would be only reimbursed for up to 25 days unless there was a medical reason. So say a chronic illness or hospitalization that then exceeded and there was actual documentation to show why it exceeded the 25 days, that would be the only reason that it would exceed that 25 days. Otherwise, it's just the 25 days.
Okay. Representative Radinovich?
I'm sorry, I had no question. I was trying to snag our researcher, actually.
He said you had a question. So. Are there any other questions? Oh, Representative Franson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to say to the members, you know, as a former child care provider myself, I know that these 25 absent days are very important to our families that are on assistance. Some kids are sicker than others if they have asthma or some other health-related issue. And although we had a serious budget deficit the last biennium, I ask each member to vote yes on this and put the kids first and help our struggling families out. So thanks.
Thank you, Representative Franson. Representative Powell.
Thank you, Chair. I guess my question is you know, I see in a lot of the stuff that it talks about the kids being sick, but from my understanding, the if they're ill, they don't get charged a day. Isn't that the way this reads? Is that if they got a medical documentation from a doctor that it doesn't apply to the absent days? Or did I miss something?
Keller?
Mr. Chair, Representative Howe. So currently, it wouldn't matter. It's 10 days. It could be illness or not. There is no documentation needed. After 10 days, even if they were hospitalized for, you know, an additional week, there would not be any reimbursement. So there's no medical exemptions at all in current law. So,
Representative Howe, do you have a further
Thank
question?
Thank you, Chair. Follow-up? But this bill would allow... So if they were ill, it wouldn't count against the 25 days. So they get 25 days plus whatever sick days.
Ms. Keller?
Mr. Chair, Representative Howe. So the 25 days, it would only go above beyond the 25 days if parents wanted to document for medical reasons. So if they were out for, say, a fever, they probably would not get a doctor's note, so that would count against the 25 days. Really, the beyond the 25 days is only going to be for very extreme situations of chronic illness or hospitalization. And I know as a director, when I directed for 10 years, I had very few families that actually utilized those medical exemptions beyond the 25 days. For most part, they just utilized the 25 days.
Are there any further questions? Okay, then Representative Moran renews her motion to pass the bill as amended, and it would be referred to the Health and Human Services Finance Committee. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Passes. Now we'll have a further presentation on the Parent Aware rating system and also on licensing child care. The first presenter is Mary Orr. She was here. Oh, it's there. And then Ms. Rust, hope I got that close. Could you come down so that you're also, unless Mary Orr has somebody else with you? No, okay.
So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mary Orr. I'm with the Department of Human Services. I oversee the Community Partnerships and Child Care Services area of the department. Child care services includes the subsidized child care program for low-income families, and it also includes activities to improve the quality of child care. And I appreciate the opportunity to provide the committee with more information about Parent Aware. Parent Aware is a centerpiece of a much larger early childhood initiative that's moving forward in Minnesota, an initiative to advance the state's efforts to ensure that all young children will have access to high-quality early learning. I presented some about Parent Aware last week. Some of this will be a little bit of a repeat in the new information because some members weren't here last week. But Parent Aware is a tool that's designed to ensure that it kind of does two things. It ensures that more children are ready for kindergarten by supporting early childhood providers and teachers in building the quality of their programs. And secondly, it provides parents with understandable consumer information about program quality. Minnesota's receipt of the federal Race to the Top Early Learning Challenge grant last year is allowing us to expand Parent Aware statewide over the next 4 years. An expansion is being led by the Minnesota Department of Human Services in coordination with the Office of Early Learning. Child care providers and other early learning programs like private and public preschool programs and Head Start volunteer to participate, and they receive a star rating based on quality measures. Star ratings are made available to parents to use when they shop for child care, and participating parents, providers can receive support and coaching to support their improving their rating and maintaining high quality. As far as child care providers go and helping them improve their quality, child care providers must be licensed, and they have to have no negative actions in order to participate in Parent Aware. Non-accredited child care providers who volunteer to participate get free technical assistance, professional development, advising, and low-cost training. And once they're rated, programs that are awarded a 1, 2, or 3-star rating receive a quality improvement grant of up to $1,000. In addition, some providers that are interested in participating and preparing for Parent Aware, but they're not quite ready to go either because they're not rolling out to that area of the state yet, or they're just not ready. We do have something called Building Quality, and that provides up to 30 hours of free intensive coaching along with a $500 quality improvement grant. And these quality improvement grants are used to either buy materials for the program, provide funding for training, or other things to carry out what might be in a program improvement plan for that particular program. Rated programs also get marketing support. Parent Aware helps rated programs proactively promote their ratings and with a variety of marketing tools. So you may in your neighborhood have seen maybe a banner on a fence or in a window of a program that's participating in Parent Aware, announcing that they're participating and showing what star rating that they have. And then finally, programs that participate or opt to participate in Parent Aware attract business of parents that are using ratings to help them select a program for their child. Implementation is being supported by local child care resource and referral agencies across the state. And we're also very pleased to be working and partnering with many other organizations at both the state and local level. There's a business-led Parent Aware for School Readiness, often referred to as PASSER, that's playing a key role in promoting Parent Aware across Minnesota and also helping to evaluate its effectiveness over time. In Greater Minnesota, the Minnesota Initiative Foundation's Early Childhood Coalitions are investing time and funding to prepare early childhood programs for Parent Aware in their local communities. And in the Twin Cities, the Greater Twin Cities United Way is targeting significant resources to help child care programs become accredited and eligible for parent rating all at once. And then, as I mentioned before, parents help ratings help parents find quality. Parents can often make judgments about a program's cleanliness, affordability, and location, and they don't need help with that kind of a thing. But parents often do need help recognizing what early learning programs are using best practices for preparing children for kindergarten. The Parent Aware ratings help parents shop for early childhood education programs, similar to Consumer Reports when you're out looking for a car. The Parent Aware ratings use a 1-to-4-star system, which you can find online, and the website is www.parentawareratings.org. So parents can go there and do a search geographically or other ways to find whether or not a provider they might be interested in has a parent aware rating and learn about the program. There's also phone service available through child care resource and referral agencies, or parents can simply ask a program whether or not their parent aware rating. We understand that parents want this kind of information. There was a survey done in December of 2011 that found 96% of Minnesotans said this kind of information would be useful to parents. Parents want to make the best decisions for their child and for their family, and Parent Aware is a tool, reputable tool, to help them make smart decisions. The ratings measure if and how child care and early learning professionals are using best practices that are most predictive of kindergarten readiness. And there's four areas that we're looking at: physical health and well-being, teaching and relationships, assessment of child progress, and teacher training and education. And I think there was a handout that was in your packet that describes those four areas of standards. And the measures that are used to rate providers are different for family child care providers and for centers, recognizing the difference in the types of setting. As we're rolling out Parent Aware across the state, we are taking into account learnings from the pilot that we did in Minnesota. In 2011, we concluded 4 years of piloting Parent Aware in 5 communities. And some of the key findings from that evaluation were that children showed significant gains over a year's time in measures of expressive and receptive vocabulary, print knowledge, pre-math concepts, social competence, and approaches to learning. And those positive gains were larger for children from low-income families than for the full sample of children served by parent-aware programs. 60% of centers and 70% of family child care providers improved their rating during this pilot period from at least one star from an initial rating to their second rating. So they may have been rated at a 2-star the first time they were rated, and then the second time that they were re-rated in that 4-year period, they increased at least 1-star level, maybe 2. 92% of the rated providers said quality improvement coaching and grants led to improved quality within their programs. By 2015, all Minnesota communities and all types of early learning programs will have an opportunity to participate in Parent Aware. There are 2 ways early learning programs can receive a rating. Some programs that are already meeting quality standards, like Head Start, public school pre-K programs, and accredited child care programs. There's a quick route to a rating. We call it an accelerated rating process. And for those programs that meet that criteria, they must demonstrate use of a curriculum and assessment tools that are aligned with early childhood indicators of progress. And for those types of programs, an opportunity to participate in Parent Aware is available now in every community in the state. For child care providers that are not accredited, we're doing a phased rollout of full ratings for Parent Aware. And there's a map in your packet just showing that the rollout schedule and the timing of that. And in counties where the rollout is happening, there are 2 opportunities each year to join Parent Aware with the full ratings. In January, and so those, we do it in cohorts. So the January cohort, there'd be a 6-month period and ratings would be issued in July. And then there's a July, or issued in June, I'm sorry. And then another cohort starts in July with issues, ratings issued in December. And during these 6-month period of time, child care providers attend an orientation session, complete and submit an application with supporting from their local child care resource and referral agency. So there is application support available to interested programs. If the program is a child care center, there will be a trained observer that will spend a half day in their program assessing the program's quality. Because Parent Aware ratings have the largest impact on low-income children, it's being expanded first to the counties in the state with the highest number of low-income children. And with the planned rollout this year, Parent Aware ratings will be available in 22 counties and available through 6 different tribes. We're assessing and evaluating Parent Aware as we're implementing it and expanding it statewide, and we intend to recalibrate our efforts as needed to continuously improve the tool. And I'd be happy to answer any questions about Parent Aware.
Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question about what would parents see? What would the visual be to parents as far as how they would determine one center over another? Would it be 4 stars versus 3? Would it be 4 stars and 3 paragraphs of data? Would it be 4 stars in 4 different areas? Can you kind of give me an understanding of what?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think we can provide. I gave you just a very high level piece of information about the standards, but for each of those standards, and again, they look different whether it's a center or a family child care provider. But there are a number of measures then that a parent can look through and determine whether or not that's something that's important to them. And for example, if it's important for a family to be very engaged in the care of the child, place more emphasis and gradually measure parent and child provider interaction in different ways. And so whether it's a 1 star, the amount of interaction might be different than what a 4 star would look like. And so through the website, we try to provide information, easily understood information by parents, so that they can figure out what things of these standards might be most important to them, whether it's teaching, physical health and well-being. And then they can use that to determine what program might be best suited to their child. So for some families, it may be a 2 star is just fine. You know, the location is right, and it meets the standards that the parent cares the most about. For another family, a 4 star might be just right. Does that answer your question?
Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me use an example near and dear to my heart, TripAdvisor. You go to TripAdvisor and you look at hotels, so you can tell whether they're 4 star, 3 star, 2 star. They got user reviews explaining why someone rated something a 2 star. What level of detail will a user have that will help inform their decision making in over and above 1 to 4 stars?
Ms. Orr.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative, there is more detail behind each of these standards that that a parent can use to help ascertain it. And it's more, I think the TripAdvisor, oftentimes it's independent, somebody that's been there before and they write their review. This is a more objective criteria. Again, we can provide more information to the committee, and it is available on the website for the parents to discern, what's important to them and how does one provider compare to another.
Representative Barrett, did you have another question? Representative Breiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Orr, I'm wondering if you would comment on what we've learned through our pilot projects on engaging home providers and whether we're doing a better job of that engagement. I know there's been a range of resistance among home providers, and I'd just like you to speak to that.
Ms. Orr.
Mr. Chair and Representative, we are continuing, I think, to work to engage family child care providers that when we look at the distribution across types of programs, we are getting more participation from programs like Head Start, school-based programs, centers, we are also getting family child care participation. And I think a big part of that has been some of the work that's being done at the local level, whether it's through the Minnesota Initiative Foundations and others, but coalitions within the community, working with providers in their community and figuring out, what do those providers need in order to be interested in even looking into Parent Aware. So we are making progress, but we'd like to see even more family child care providers come forward.
Representative Breiner, any further? Representative Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Orr, I have heard a little bit of the same resistance from home providers, and I have a couple of questions. I was wondering how frequent is the reassessment of the rating?
Ms. Orr.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm going to just look to a colleague because that's changed from the pilot, and I just want to make sure. Is it every 2 years?
Great. Thank you. Mr. Chair.
Meyer.
Ms. Orr, Is the program totally voluntary? I got a call from to be rated. Mm-hmm. I got a call this last week from a home provider who was very, very upset, and I explained to them that I understood that it was voluntary to get the rating. Can you confirm that?
Yep. Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, it's a voluntary program.
All right. Mr. Chair, Ms. Orr, is there an appeal process? A home provider goes through the whole process and they get a one and they really think that they're pretty good. Is there an appeal process or do they have to wait a certain period of time and reapply or go through the process again?
Ms. Orr?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, there is a process that if a provider feels that the rating isn't correct, there's an opportunity for them to provide some additional information.
Representative Meyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Orr. And then can you explain who actually does the evaluations? Who would go to a home provider and do the assessment?
Ms. Orr.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't know that I would call it an assessment, but we do provide technical assistance through the Child Care Resource and Referral Agencies at the local level. And then for the, if you are referring to the on-site observation that occurs in the centers, we work with the University of Minnesota, and there are trained observers that would go into a center and do an observation.
Representative Meyer.
Mr. Chair, I don't think I was very clear in my question on that. What I was wondering is for a home provider, mm-hmm. who would come and make determine their rating?
Ms. Orr.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the actual determination of the rating, once the application is there, the information's been submitted, the actual determination of the ratings occur at the Department of Human Services. So we take in all the information and documentation, and the ratings are actually issued through the Department of Human Services.
Thank you.
Representative Meyer?
Thank you.
Is that all? I have a couple questions. Does anybody else have? Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Lane.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Ms. Orr, is this parent aware standards list that you gave us, is that basically how the stars are? If you had just did physical health and well-being, it'd be one star. If you moved up on the list so that maybe four stars would require this advanced training, is that how it works?
Ms. Orr.
Mr. Chair, Representative, not to overwhelm you with paper, I just provided you sort of with this high-level overview of the standards. But behind these standards are a set of measures and indicators that vary by star level. And so different expectations are required at the one-star level, the two-star level, the three, within these standard categories. And again, the standards are different, the measures are different, whether it's a family child care provider or a center. But we'd be happy to provide the committee with the additional background information that talks about the measures that are behind these standards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would like that. And then this teacher training and education, does that apply to a family home?
Ms. Orr.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that category would apply to a family home. But what would be the measures that would be expected might be a little different than a center. Okay.
Representative Lane. Representative, are you done? Okay. Representative Franson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure which one of you want to answer this. Parent Aware. Actually, I started spot checking, calling some providers to see if they were happy with Parent Aware, and I started just calling the one stars. And I'll tell you why I decided to call the one stars. Because as I was looking at the four stars, I'm looking at Community Action, Anoka, 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 skip through Head Start at Roseville. I mean, Head Start, Head Start, Head Start, Arrowhead Economic Opportunity, New Horizon, all kinds of New Horizons. And then I see, down to the one stars, which is home daycares are getting the one stars. And that concerns me. And so I called a few of them. I didn't have much time in between meetings, but I thought, I'll just start calling and seeing how the one-star providers are enjoying the program. And so two of the people that I took notes on here, one said, awesome idea, but there's lots of room for refinement within the Parent Aware program. The provider did say that it is a new program. It's a good program. However, there will always be some provider that looks at it as a babysitter type of deal, where they're not going to want to look at it as a profession. She said that she believes that there needs to be some more coaches, perhaps. But when I asked her, does a one-star hinder your business in any way, shape, or form? And she said, well, because it's such a new program, it hasn't really affected her, but her families have been with her for numerous years, along with the other person that I talked to. So when they the children are moving into school, they may have another baby, and mm-hmm. so they've got long-term family. So although the provider has a one-star quality, the parents that they're providing services for look at those providers already as four stars. But yes, I'm very concerned. A lot of four stars with the academies, and then you get down to the home care, and it's very disturbing. So could you explain why that is? And when I do look at some of the providers' names, you know, that's also concerning. Is there a reason why those that have come from a different ethnic background are getting one stars also? And what is that telling our providers?
Ms. Orr.
Mr. Chair, Representative. You know, I think as we're in the early stages of a rollout, just moving from a pilot to a rollout, and what I would hope that we would see as we are fully rolled out are two things. I would like our desire and our goal as Parent Aware expands is that we have a good distribution of participating programs, whether it's family child care centers, Head Start, and school-based pre-K. And so we're looking for participation across all types of programs, and we're also looking for a good distribution across 1, 2, 3, 4. Parent Aware is designed to be a continuous improvement kind of a model, and so you know, we want to encourage programs to come in at all levels, and then work with them to progress, you know, up the scale over time. So we're really looking for a distribution across all star type and across different types of programs. But I think it'll take some time to get there.
Representative Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for that explanation. But I do find it hard to believe that every Head Start is a four star. Every New Horizon is a four star. And when I go into the 2 and the 1 stars, I'm just not seeing those centers in there.
Mr. Chair and Representative, you know, the four star for the accelerated rating process that goes along with Head Start programs, school-based pre-K, and accredited programs acknowledges that those programs already have some quality measures that they have to attain in order to be Head Start in order to be accredited. And so what we're requesting of them, we do have some additional criteria for them, but when they go through the accelerated rating process, they do come out at 4 stars. And so that accelerated rating process is a little bit different than the full rating process. Through the full rating process, they can come across as 1, 2, 3, or 4 stars. So that's a little bit of a difference between the full rating and the accelerated rating process.
Representative Franz.
Thank you, Mr. Mullery. And I, you know, this being my former background, yeah. There's a lot of interest mm-hmm. in this, and for me, and just being able that I understand the business and what the providers go through. You know, one of the providers that I spoke to said, who had a one star, said that although she likes the program, she believes that this program works better for a center than a family, and her business relies on references mm-hmm. from her current current parents that she has in her home, and that she also had applied for a two-star, but she had some setbacks on the requirements for that. So the program is dragging their feet from moving her from a one-star to a two-star. And also, in order to move from a one-star to a two-star, there is cost involved for the providers in order to do that to enrich their, you know, to their star level. And I'm very concerned that, you know, the Dayton administration hasn't come out publicly and said that child care is not going to be taxed, thus creating more of a burden for our families to afford daycare, and yet another burden for the our child care providers to charge a sales tax, and yet then creating an issue where they may not be able to afford to move on to another star.
Ms. Orr.
Mr. Chair, Representative, you know, I think we do understand that there are some costs that a provider would incur participating in parent aware, particularly if they want to move up the scale. And we do try to provide low-cost training to them so that the cost of training might not be such a burden. We're also trying to make lower-cost curriculum and assessment tools available to them. So we're doing what we can to help them improve their quality and not have it be such a burden. And then, as I mentioned before, there are quality improvement grants that are available to programs participating. So we recognize that improving quality and maintaining quality does have a price tag, but we are trying to provide resources as we can to help them.
Representative France.
Sorry, last thing. Another thing that I have, Mr. Chair, and to those testifying, I'm just very concerned that the market is not demanding parent aware. You know, you go through this list, and it's mostly centers that have participated in the pilot programs. And so I just believe that, you know, we want to be very cautious in moving this out to a statewide level when the market certainly doesn't look like to me that it's demanding this program.
I don't think that's the question, but Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Orr, can you just kind of piggybacking on Representative France's questions, are there different categories within the early childhood, early education area? For example, are there categories for in-home versus center versus a Head Start?
Ms. Orr.
Mr. Chair, Representative, categories.
Well, let me, Mr. Chair, Ms. Orr, my main question is, can you provide the committee with the number of centers in each category that are listed as 4, 3, 2, or 1 star, so that we can actually quantify how they're different, or if they're different, maybe they're not.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, you know, I think there is already a request that we're working on breaking out the information by counties, and I think we can also break it out by level of rating, if that's what you're interested in. Yeah.
Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There is a cost to providers taking on a training in order to be rated. So can you give me an estimate of what that cost is?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that cost, I think, depends on the provider, what training they may have had, what training they may need. So I don't know that I can give you an estimate at this point. So I think it depends on the provider, what kind of training that they have had.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Moran.
Thank you. So, in general, if I'm at level one or rated with a one, and I want to move to a rating of two, and there's different category of classes of training I would need to take, generally, what would be the range of the cost?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm going to look to my colleague to see if we have information. Do we have that information here?
Would you state your name?
Mr. Chair, representatives, my name is Deb Swenson-Clatt. I'm with the Department of Human Services, Child Development Services.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Chair and Representative, if a program is moving from a one-star rating, at that level, there are 8 hours of child development training required in order to receive a one-star rating. To move to a two-star rating, some more training is required. And as Ms. Orr explained, what might be the cost to a provider in a family child care home would be for that individual. And training typically costs in Minnesota in our through our child care resource and referral system about $10 a training hour. And so, again, it will the cost of the provider will depend on what training they have and what they need to move forward to a next star rating level. We do have training subsidies that we're moving out across Minnesota that reduce the cost for training by half. So we're making training available for some parent aware required training that will mean that a provider will be just paying $5 a training hour.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Chair, so, and I ask that question because I truly believe that there has to be some level of developmental learning that's going on. We've talked about the brain research and how important it is to start early in language and reading and all those pieces. And so I think my concern with the parent aware part was, as I talked earlier in another committee, if there was a daycare provider that was closer to me or to a parent, and they, and that provider was someone that I knew that was providing a safe and nurturing environment, and they was only rated one, you know, I would want to have my child attend that daycare or home care provider service. And I think more or less my concern was in relationship to the scholarships and how that would work if I could only, if the scholarship was only going to be utilized at a 3 or 4 rating center or a home care provider. And unfortunately for me, I had a conversation earlier with the commissioner who kind of like helped clarify that there would be an opportunity for a home daycare provider to be able to utilize those scholarships with the exception that they will go on to take on some workshops or some trainings to become in order to raise their ratings. So there is an opportunity for a one-rated center to retreat, to utilize those scholarships in order to come to full capacity or benefit also from the scholarships. That is correct, right?
Ms. Swenson-Clatt? Or Ms. Orr?
Mr. Chair, Representative, with the current scholarships, that is correct.
Yeah. Representative Moran?
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am relatively new to the parent aware stuff. This is my first term here, and so I'm trying to catch up as we go along. And I heard Representative Moran asking questions about the scholarships and whether they would be able to work with home care providers to get them further along in the parent aware system. Does that also speak to the proposed increases in scholarships in the governor's budget? Are you aware?
Ms. Orr?
Mr. Chair, Representative, Karen Cadigan is here from the Office of Early Learning that oversees the scholarships, and she might be best to respond to that question.
Okay.
Ms. Cadigan?
Hi, everybody. My name is Karen Cadigan. I'm the Director of the Office of Early Learning. Mr. Chair, Representatives, with regard to the scholarships, and I'm glad you asked about them because the scholarships and Parent Aware really are meant to work together in order to help provide both access for families to those programs that are on the path towards towards higher quality, and also to provide support and resources for those providers, incentives for providers to move along the quality. So the current scholarships plan is actually that providers at both the highest level, the 3- and 4-star level, can receive scholarships of up to $4,000 from families. But providers of all kinds who have signed a participation agreement with ParentAware or who are rated at 1- or 2-star can also receive scholarships at lower levels. This is part of our implementation and continuous improvement process that Ms. Orr referred to, and part of what we heard quickly from the communities was that building quality costs money, and that being able to incentivize providers at that level, those lower levels, was important. I think that's helped us get better uptake and buy-in and participation. As to the governor's current proposal, I think that it's yet to be seen what the details of that language will look like. That's what we look forward to during the legislative process. Mr. Chair, if I may, one final comment just about sort of the overarching point, I think, about ParentAware. You know, our current system has all these fragmented sort of programs, siloed programs, family child care, center-based care, Head Start, school-based programs. And the whole idea of a rating system is to set a common bar of quality based on research and as a way to communicate to families quality, not as the reason to choose something, but as a piece of information while they're shopping around. So you may well, I think of it, I know people compare it to Consumer Reports, but if you think about folks that have significant brand loyalty to a kind of car, for example, those of us that have already chosen providers for our children probably have significant brand loyalty, if you will, to those providers. So it's not the only piece of information, but it's an additional piece of information.
Thank you, Representative Radinovich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And while I certainly commend, you know, the effort behind ParentAware, and I think it's something I generally can get behind, my concern comes from my represented district in central Minnesota that's very sparse. The two largest cities are about 2,000 people each, and beyond that, we're talking like towns of 500. And so a lot of our care providers are home care-based providers. Could you speak to, you know, where we're at in the rollout? Are there issues in areas with geographical sparsity? What's the feedback that you guys are hearing from providers in areas like that?
Ms. Kattigan?
Mr. Chair, and representatives, I'm happy to comment on that, and then Ms. Orr, wherever she went, I'm sure is happy to comment as well. You know, this is a new idea, and it's intended to help move our state towards getting kids ready for school. This is a big change, and so we absolutely have been sitting down with communities to hear how it's going. And part of that has been in particular with family child care providers. And we are aware, given the large number of family child care providers in Minnesota, and especially in greater Minnesota, where that's the main option for a lot of families, of removing barriers for all providers, especially family child care providers, to be able to access supports and to provide the quality that they want to provide. There are challenges, but I think that it's one of the most, one of the sort of unintended consequences, I think, of ParentAware has been this sort of rallying point and way to bring providers together. So, for example, last fall we sat with a community of family providers up in northern Minnesota, about 6 family child care providers in one large county who had never, many of them had been in business for years, and they had never, they didn't know each other. They hadn't sat down together. And sort of going through the ParentAware cohort and training helped them build those relationships to support each other. And I don't know, Ms. Orr, if you want to comment further on that.
Ms. Orr, do you have something to add to that? Or
Mr. Chair, I guess the only other addition, we within the Race to the Top grant, we have what we call 4 transformation zones, and one of those transformation zones is the White Earth area of the state. And so they have been in the forefront with family child care in a more sparsely populated area of the state. And I think that there are learnings from their work ahead of the rest of the state that might be helpful for other communities around the state. So so I think we are learning as we're going, and there are best practices that we can share, as Karen mentioned.
Representative Radinovich.
One final question. Is there a... an approximate percentage of care providers that are currently enrolled in the Parent Aware rating system in Greater Minnesota? Is there, and also, is there a marked difference between those numbers and Parent Aware providers who are in the suburban or metropolitan districts?
Ms. Orr.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the landscape of providers does look different, metro and suburban versus the rest of the state. So the provider, it's more heavily centered in the metro area. And then last week, Representative Franzen had asked for information, and we're working on it. We had it based out by region, but now we're sorting it by county. That will give you a breakout of participating providers by county.
Representative Redenman.
Just one final comment. You know, I certainly appreciate that, and I share the goal, I think, of most members on this committee, that we need to move towards school readiness for children in that age group. But, you know, a concern of mine is that with the allocation in the governor's budget to these scholarships, that, you know, money disproportionately is going to systems that are already set up and able to make best use of the scholarships, and perhaps, you know, at the expense of some of us in Greater Minnesota. So that's something that I'd look for more information on, and that I'll be keenly aware of as we go forward. Thank you.
Representative Wayne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to reiterate some of the words I heard here, that this is that Parent Aware standards are the centerpiece of a larger agenda to ensure children have access to quality child care, and that the Parent Aware system provides a common bar of quality across all the different programs. I would also emphasize that some of it is to have accountability for public funds. So it may be helpful to at least consider the possibility of the difference between a grant and a scholarship at a college level. A grant you can take and use it where you want to, but a scholarship usually tends towards a certain program. And if that's, I think, why we're differentiating between the bill we passed earlier on child care assistance and allowing for the 25 days, and scholarship program, which is more money, and we need to be publicly accountable for that use of that money, and we want the best we can do. And we're moving through with this program, and as she said, a continuous improvement model, so that even right now, 1 and 2 stars can have access to some of that scholarship money, as I understand. But over time, the point is to build quality.
Representative Whitmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this is probably for Ms. Orr. Just out of curiosity, what are the licensing requirements for in-home daycare? What kind of training or what kind of standards are required for licensure?
Mr. Chair,
why are you all smiling when I ask that
question? Well, because, Mr. Chair, Representative, it's a good segue to my colleagues here at the table who are here to present an overview of licensing.
If we could get to them.
Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go.
I thought they wanted to not answer questions, and so they had people asking questions of Ms. Orr. Representative Moran.
No, I will wait for the president.
Okay. Can we go to the licensing? Okay, Ms. Rust.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Laura Plummer-Zarust, and I'm with the Department of Human Services Office of Inspector General, and I am a Deputy Inspector General in that capacity, serve as the Director of the Licensing Division. Many of you may know, about a year and a half ago, a new office was formed at the Department of Human Services, the Office of Inspector General. The former Licensing Division Director, Jerry Kerber, is the Inspector General. And I now am the Director of the Licensing Division. With me today is Mary Kelsey, and she is the manager of the child care licensing areas that we are going to be talking about today. I was asked to just do a very general, high-level overview of child care licensing, and so I will do that, and hope certainly we can answer any questions that any of you have as well. So you do have informational packets in front of you, and these include some general information that's on our website, general information about child care licensing, and also would note, and there's some brochures that are available to the public on our website, and also would indicate that we do have information on our website about provider-specific, child care provider-specific, all of our providers, but including obviously child carers. Then you can look up specific providers and get information on those providers. There are two primary license types of licensed child care centers and family child care. And I'm going to talk about each one briefly, identify some of the general areas of requirement in the rules. They're both licensed under Minnesota Statutes Chapter 245A, which is the Human Services Licensing Act. I'll identify some general areas in the interest of time, and then give you a little information about what it is that licensing does with these areas, and then lastly some data that you may find of interest as background on the licensing areas. Licensing standards are generally considered minimum standards, but child care standards are also premised on promoting the physical, intellectual, social, and emotional development of children receiving these services. So I'll start out with child care center licensing standards. And these are also licensed in addition to the statute under administrative rules, as many of our services, of course, are. And that's under Minnesota Rules 9503, Chapter 9503. You may hear it referred to as Rule 3 informally. Child care centers are generally located in a non-residential setting, a center, and serve a higher number of children than family child care. So I'm going to kind of do a little comparing and contrasting for a little background as well. So general areas of child care center rule requirements include staff qualifications, including directors, teachers, assistant teachers, and aides, and the numbers of those staff required depend on the number of children served. Age categories are defined in both services, the age categories being infant, toddler, preschooler, and school age. And in centers, those range from beginning at 6 weeks up to the age of 13, so through 12, basically. The child care center, and I can give you much more detail if you like, and I have the expert with me today, but I'll highlight the general areas. Child care center rules focus on staff-to-child ratios for each of the age categories I just mentioned. And those age categories are defined in terms of months and years, of course. And so within each of those age categories, there is a ratio of caregivers to children, and then a maximum, what we call a maximum group size for each of those children categories. The rules also prescribe physical environment and space requirements being based on the number of children served. Materials and equipment, also by age category, a number of children served. And then specifies a child care program plan that the child care center must have, and those policies and procedures that the child care center must have. And again, this is very general and quite simplified, but that gives you an idea of the types of areas that are covered in the child care center licensing rule. I should note that in both child care areas, the training requirements, for the most part now, are contained in statute. That happened a couple of years ago. So staff training is a part of the child care center area and does prescribe those training requirements, both for initial training and ongoing training. DHS's role with regard to licensing child care centers, there's really two models, and that's why I'm dividing them up this way. The child care centers have a different licensing standards, and they look different, but also DHS has different roles. We license the child care centers directly. That means we have licensors. We have 9 licensors on staff that go out and perform these functions, and so they work with the child care centers, first of all, on applications to become new child care centers. They work to issue the initial license for these centers. Do periodic ongoing license inspections. They're done at least every 2 years. Also investigating complaints. So in a number of cases, of course, we're going to be out there much more often than 2 years to investigate if there is an allegation of a licensing violation. We issue correction orders directly at the department to child care centers for violations of specific rule and or statutory provisions. And then for more serious violations of statute or rule, we issue licensing sanctions, which are prescribed by statute, and those are conditional licenses, fines, suspensions, revocations, and something called a suspension and then a temporary immediate suspension as well. The Department of Human Services conducts the background studies for child care center staff and all those individuals required to have background study, and the Department of Human Services conducts the child maltreatment investigations under those applicable laws. There are laws that govern background studies, the Human Services Background Studies Act, and of course laws, as you know, that govern the investigation and the child protection system. So we do all of that related to the child care centers, and that is different for family child care, as I'll highlight in a minute. So some data that you might find of interest, and I have provided in your handout or in your folder data for the past 3 years. I'm just going to highlight the last calendar year data, but 3 years will give you a little bit maybe of a trend or some comparison information. As of today, there are 1,588 centers with a total license capacity of 105,675. During calendar year 2012, 88 centers closed and 95 opened. We conducted 20,242 background studies in child care centers. We conducted 129 investigations of maltreatment, alleged maltreatment. We investigated 413 licensing complaints. We issued 783 correction orders for child care centers, and then issued 129 licensing sanctions, which included 5 conditional licenses, 6 denials, 109 fines, 8 revocations, and 1 temporary immediate suspension. So that's a real quick high-level overview of centers. And now I'll do the same thing for family child care to contrast, and then we can get much more specific as you would like, into those standards or answer any questions. So family child care licensing is also licensed under 245A, as well as an administrative rule under Chapter 9502. Generally, child care in the family child care area is provided in a residence, and most often in the provider's own home. So it's a residential setting. Family child care is generally 10 or fewer children at one time. And then there's group family child care as well, which is up to 14 children in care at one time. And there are, within these classes of family child care and group family child care licenses, that get into the detail about limiting the number of infants, toddlers, and preschools, total number of children under school age. And again, we'd be happy to provide more information about that as well. But generally, that is the number that you're looking at. The cap is going to be 14 for group family child care. Some general rule standards include caregiver qualifications, training for the provider, the caregiver, indoor and outdoor space requirements, policies and procedures, child records. And I should note that, you know, compared to the centers, of course, we're not talking about prescriptive staffing, levels in terms of requirements about having teachers and assistant teachers and aides. That's one of the differences that are laid out in the rules. We're talking more about the training for the caregiver, him or herself, the license holder. We're generally talking about one individual or a second caregiver in the home. As I noted, there are multiple classes of group family, and there are specialized infant and toddler licenses, and they also then have restrictions on the number of children that are served and the age categories. The age categories are defined as newborn, infant, toddler, preschooler, and school age, and those are slightly different than those that are in the center rules. Family child care is what we refer to as a delegated licensing model. So I spoke of child care center. All of the licensing responsibilities are performed by the department, by our licensing staff here at DHS. Family child care is one of the delegated licensing areas, and by that I mean many of the responsibilities for licensing are delegated by statute, by Section 245A16 in our Licensing Act, to the counties. And so the counties then pursuant to that delegation, accept the applications for family child care. They conduct the licensing inspections, you know, the initial and ongoing licensing inspections. They do the complaint investigations for family child care, issue the correction orders directly, do issue some rule variances. Then, when it comes to sanctions, licensing sanctions, the counties make a recommendation to the department, and then the department actually issues licenses and issues licensing sanctions based on information obtained in those recommendations. The counties are mandated under that delegation to enforce and defend the commissioner's orders and to represent and defend the commissioner's orders in administrative hearings. And so we work really closely with the counties in terms of those delegated functions. The counties also perform the background studies for family child care, and I should note that that is the only type of background study related to services that are that we license that are not performed by DHS. There are other delegated service areas, but we do perform the background studies for those. So the counties do family child care. And of course, as you know, counties are charged with the child protection mandate for families and for this type of setting. So what does DHS do directly related to these type of services? So first of all, the area that Mary manages, these licensing staff work with the county licensing staff to assure compliance with their delegated function. And there's a rule that governs our oversight of the counties. It's informally referred to as Rule 13. And we indeed monitor the counties every four-year audits to see if they're complying with their county delegated functions under statute. We also issue the licenses, as I indicated, and deny licenses based on their recommendation. We issue all of the licensing sanction orders. The department, while the counties conduct the background studies, as I've explained, we at the Department of Human Services conduct the due process review of those, the first level of review, the reconsideration. We have an in-house group that does that reconsideration work. We do retain some variance authority. A lot of what we do with the counties is providing technical assistance and guidance to the county licensing staff, and we also work closely with the county attorney staff in the appeals area, as I mentioned. Some data on family child care for calendar year 2012. As of today, there are 10,776 licensed family child care providers with a total license capacity of 126,543. In 2012, 1,323 family child care programs closed and 949 new programs opened. There were 504 sanctions issued, including 85 conditional licenses, 58 denials, 114 fines, excuse me, I was hoping I'd make it through without coughing, 117 revocations, 11 suspensions, 119 orders of temporary immediate suspension. And I'll just note that temporary immediate suspensions are what we consider our very most serious sanction in terms of a sanction that is imposed immediately prior to a hearing based on a standard of imminent risk of harm to children receiving services. And those are typically issued in family child care programs. And we have five DHS licensors that perform this work in this area, and there are approximately 150 county licensors across the state that perform the delegated functions. So again, a very general high-level overview gives you an idea of the two different types of child care and how they are regulated. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I'll refer to Representative Winkler because you had a question.
My question was sufficiently answered.
Okay. Ms. Kelsey, did you want to add anything, or are you the expert answering of questions? Or
I'm just here to answer questions.
Does any member have any questions? No? Okay. Oh, Representative Barrett.
Sure, I'll ask a question just to keep us from dinner here, I think, probably. But do any of you take questions from the public?
Ms. Rust?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, of course. In fact, a lot of what we do, we get calls every day probably from the public. I mentioned at the beginning that we do have a website, and we do provide information about licensed providers, and we encourage parents. We think it's very important that parents are very informed about child care providers, what the requirements are, as we've been discussing here today, but also what the history, if they're looking for a provider, what that provider's history is. So we do, we get a lot of calls. I don't know how many right now off the top of my head every day, but every day we receive calls from the public, both related to child care centers and family child care. Some of those may be complaints, but some of them may be asking general information. Some may be from parents. Some may be from license holders. Some may be from other members of the public. So certainly we are always willing to answer questions from the public and consider that an important part of our job.
Representative Barrett.
So then, Mr. Chair, thank you very much. Are there a couple concerns maybe that come up more often than not that you think we would be interested in knowing about?
Ms. Russ?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we're thinking on that. certainly,
Ms. Kelsey's supposed to have the answer to the question.
She certainly has way down the level of knowledge of expertise on all of each of the requirements. But, Will Mayor, do you want to try to answer that in terms of the center area, what types of calls they might get most frequently, and anything related to family child care?
Chair and members, one of the more common calls that we might get from the public is just inquiries about particular centers and their compliance history. And sometimes we get questions just about the requirements in general. There's a certain volume of calls that we get every day. For family child care, I would say with the recent, interest and concerns about infant mortality, we've certainly gotten some calls from providers with questions and concerns about those interpretations of requirements related to that. That's a specific example that I can think of off the top of my head.
Thank you. Representative Barrett? No. Anybody else? I guess not. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
For all the information, and we are adjourned.